Welcome to Sustain and Innovate Conference by Performance Days and Sports Fashion by SAZ. You are listening to an expert talk from November 2019. Ms. Sophie Bramel, independent journalist, presents Designing for Recycling, Making the Case for Monomaterial Products.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. So as you already can see, the next topic is designing for recycling. My colleague and journalist Sophie Bramel, who is really an expert in functional textiles, will have a discussion with some interesting guests. So be curious. And now, Sophie, thank you for being here. Thank you for bringing all these guests to us. And I'm handing over all the mics. The stage is yours. Thank you so much.
Good afternoon. Ooh, this is strong. Good afternoon. Thank you for attending this panel discussion. And will the speakers please come on stage? So we're going to be asking a very simple question, but it's a question that's also very difficult. Should we blend fibers, materials, components, or should we not blend fibers, materials, components? And I think this is a great question to ask here at Performance Days, since we're all materials, into materials, looking to buy materials, develop materials, source, and just also figure out where are we going and what should we be doing tomorrow? Because there's this big question that is looming on the horizon of the entire apparel industry, from fashion to sportswear, which is, what do we do with all the waste that this industry generates? A lot of questions, not many answers to that issue today. So I wanted to focus on one part of this issue, which is, when you're choosing a material, should it be monofiber or not? And when you are developing a product, should you be thinking mono material or not? And I have here four people who have differing views on the question, and I hope we'll have an inspiring and dynamic conversation with the audience and among the speakers. So can we start with each one of you presenting yourself and your company, and quickly, and whatever, so that we know who we're talking to?
Good morning. I'm Cesare, the CEO of Cifra. It's a company in Italy. We make a seamless garment with a unique technology. It's not a circular technology like the most of the people use, but we have a warp knitting technology that allows you to have different properties. And I had to talk about the topic or just my
later? Just present yourself, because I have the questions for you. I've got everything here.
Hi, I'm Anne Prahl. I'm based in London, and I'm a sustainable design consultant. What that means is, basically, I work with brands, startups, and manufacturers to try to find design-driven solutions. And I'm working a lot on design for recycling at the moment. And there's a lot of theory out there, and the practice looks very different. So I'm really excited to be part of this panel to discuss this.
My name's Jose Fernandez from Global Merino. We are a technical textile manufacturer who happens to use merino wool as a primary ingredient and technology.
Yeah, my name is Rüdiger Fox from Sympotex. We're in the membrane functional textile business, and I've spent the last 3 years in converting 80% of our apparel collection into fully monomaterial.
Thank you very much. So since this idea was brought to my attention by you, Rüdiger, I will start with you. So if we decide that monomaterial or monofiber design is the best way to design a product that will be easier to recycle, what developments in the recycling of polyester textiles do you see, in chemical or mechanical methods, as having the most potential in the short, medium, or even very long term? Or how close are we to closing the loop? Yeah. I know it's a long question. Try to be brief.
Okay, I'm brief. We have done it already.
Okay.
So I think it's a journey. We have started with mechanical recycling. We have showed the first T-shirt, I think it's a year and a half ago, which was made out of all functional textiles, so just to demonstrate that it's feasible. And this whole question of circularity, I think what we need to bear in mind, it's a huge challenge. And huge challenges, I tend to start simple. And the simple thing is, if you have a monomaterial, you can convert it into the same material. That's easy. Now, we have a tendency to make our industry very complicated by shiny and all kinds of different textiles, mixing it up, because we had no constraint or no reason to do it differently. But when we looked at it, and we started really in a disciplined way, systematically, about 3 years ago, we have managed to convert 80% of our laminates in the apparel business into fully monomaterial. And that showed to us how much maneuvering space we have at hand. Of course, at some point, we will find new technologies. We work with one again at the moment to look at whether we can mix polyester with cellulose-based fibers. So there are certain areas where we can work. We need first to look at what fibers can be recycled as a principle or what materials can be recycled. But if you look at recycling of the plastic industry, we didn't start with Tetra Pak. I mean, it's aluminium, plastic, paper, whatever in there. So why should we start with a complex one? So the design question for me would be, how far can I get with a monomaterial, and where do I really need it? Because what we experienced is once we decided to go monomaterial, the innovation speed in polyester accelerated massively.
Interesting.
It's not what's available today, but with a simple focus and constraining the options, we went much further than we thought in a much shorter period of time.
Okay. Next to you, Jose, you are working in wool. And wool happens to be one of the few materials with polyester in our industry that you can use for outerwear, base layers, different products, different seasons also. In what case, and you know, I know you're not a big proponent of, you know, one you're not, you know, you're on the fence on one side or the other. In what cases is it better to have a fully, you know, 100% wool product? And when would you not recommend it, and for what reasons?
I think at the end of the day, that really depends on what the end application is and what is required for that garment to do. So we are primarily in the performance apparel market. All of our customers are ski companies, cycling companies, outdoor brands. And so there's, I think, a threshold at which we can no longer make product compromises. So I can make a ski pant out of a lightweight wool jersey. However, it's just the wrong tool for that particular job. It's not durable enough, it's not water repellent, it won't be warm enough. And so for someone to make a ski pant out of one of my jersey fabrics, it's simply the wrong tool and it's too much of a product compromise.
Right. Okay.
Now, can we make a functional base layer from 100% merino? Yes. Is it optimal for all applications for extreme heat conditions, trail running? Perhaps not, but it certainly applies across a broad spectrum. So for me, really, it's that end application that drives the decisions and really how much we're able to compromise.
And there's a wide array, like the cursor can be placed at various different areas, I suppose.
Sure. If somebody tells me, look, I want you to put 5% polyester into that jersey fabric because I want it to dry 1% faster, I'd say, really, that's, you know, that's silly. We're adding cost. We're really doing the product itself a disservice. You're really not getting the performance attributes that you want.
Okay.
And we've actually gone the wrong way on that spectrum. Somebody tells me, listen, this 120-gram jersey is too light. It's not durable enough. You need to do something about that. Then we'll take a look at what we have to do in order to engineer a better fabric.
Anna, you're next. So you focus, the subject today is about designing for recycling. And when I talk with the various suppliers at this trade fair and at others, when I say monofiber or monomaterial, everyone automatically thinks less innovation, less possibilities for differentiation, and just, you know, boring. So what do you tell people?
Well,
you'll let Anna talk first.
And then you. So basically, I think when we're looking at monomaterials, first we have to look at the reality of it, because actually I did a little headcount on the performance forum. There is a very tiny amount of monomaterials, and any monomaterials are really just mainly in the shells where we have polyester and nylon. When we look at base layers and mid layers, we've got most materials that have three or four different types of materials, and sometimes we have a lot of elastane and things like that. So we have to look at the reality.
Yeah.
But then also, I think we really need to look at the innovation and recycling technologies. I think there's no point coming up with all these amazing materials if we can't recycle them. So my call to industry in terms of innovation is we need to get the fabric mills and the recycling tech guys together. And when we're innovating fabrics, they have to be innovated with end of life in mind. So that's the big picture innovation. But in terms of sort of looking at innovation opportunities, I think we also need to look more, if we want to do monomaterials, we have to look at construction and engineering, how both of the fabrics and the garments, how can we design these fabrics that do different jobs for different end users by construction and engineering.
Okay.
A little bit more.
So maybe we could go directly to Cesare, because his technology helps make products with less seams. Part of it is seamless. And
In seamless, there are three different technologies: the circular knit, the Shima wool garment technology, and then the warp knit, that is the one that we use, that is totally seams-free. But about the topic of one material, one of the advantages I took from my side, of course, of my technology is to realize leggings totally seams-free, that you cannot do with circular knitting. And the second thing is that we produce for the brand. And the problem is that how can you do a leggings without Lycra inside? The fitting is not good. So you can make things to make something one fiber, especially with our technology, that is a warp technology, because in the warp, the yarn, even if it is, let's say, one without Lycra, the way the yarn go in the needle create a kind of spring that give a lot of mechanical elasticity. So maybe it's possible to realize a base layer that could be 100% merino wool or recycled fiber. But for sure, when you go on the leggings, the problem is that you must have a Lycra. No brand can work, no woman will never work a leggings without Lycra. I know there is some company that is trying to split Lycra and polyamide after producing. That this could be the solution, but it's something really at the state of the art in the beginning. So at the moment, there is no, my opinion for the leggings, one material, there is nothing at the moment. Maybe for the top.
Rüdiger, did you want to?
He's probably forgotten about what he was going to say.
Sorry,
no, I haven't. I still think we need to start asking the right questions, and the right question is a difference to our past. In the past, we went into design by saying, "How can I maximize the impression to the customer with the option of maximizing the variance?" Now the question, if we say, yes, we want sustainability, starts with constraining on, and I fully agree, recyclability of the materials. So material that cannot be recycled should be forbidden in our industry, end of story. And then we need to go to that design question and say, how far can I get with a monomaterial, and where are good reasons what I need to put additionally in to achieve a certain goal? And the third question might be, not only what the consumer wants, because a lot of wants we induced in the consumer, what the consumer needs. And that is a very different question. So I think we need to learn new questions. And when we have this in the design phase, the outcome might be very different to what we can imagine today.
Well, yeah, I mean, the one most bothering thing, I think, in this whole topic is if you have a designer, you're designing a product, you want to make a good product, good-looking product, you want it to be successful, you want it to be used and useful. But what we're telling designers when we think designing for recycling, we're thinking, well, okay, you're going to create this great product, but don't forget it's going to end in the bin. It's like, how inspiring is that for a designer? You know, so there's something to be done in materials. Go ahead, Cesar.
In terms of designing, something I heard from Lululemon last month, I was there, that I think is very interesting. Lululemon, you know, is the one that inspires almost everybody in athleisure. And we can say that fast fashion is the opposite of sustainability, because fast fashion, it means to change a lot of garment. In terms of design, what they suggest, and I think is something that's quite new that I didn't heard in this day, is to try to create a garment that the people start to love and create a connection that they want to change. Create an emotional connection, like you can say to the leather jacket that in the year you always put the same jacket, to make the nice garment with nice design that the customer get a connection with that and don't want to change.
Yes, yeah, no. Well, that's something that works also with wool, I would think, that creating a special connection with the product, I mean, because the products that you make are kind of premium, so you imagine that it's a good-looking product, you feel good in it, you perform well in it, you know, it's something that you keep for a long time. I mean, it's one of the arguments, the sustainability arguments of wool, is that it lasts.
Well, that's what I was just going to say, that now you're getting into a little bit, we're getting off topic. We're going to do a broader discussion about what sustainable is.
Well, no. I want to stick to the material. But, I mean, if you're going to choose a material, you know, between polyester and wool, let's say.
Oh, wool, always.
But there's also a durability. You know, it's washed less, can possibly last longer. I don't know. Is that something that you... Are those arguments that, you, or whatever,
oh, messages? But those are also some of the arguments that I would make in terms of blending for wool. Yes, as a pure product, it's durable. It needs to be washed less, you know, all of those things. But in this lightest form, it's not as durable as somebody might expect from, you know, a base layer, especially a premium base layer. Mm. So do we have to blend a little bit to make it more durable so that they only buy one every 3 years rather than having to buy one once a year? And
right.
As I said, that's where we get into a much broader discussion about sustainability. Yeah. But I think one thing that we've touched on a little bit here is I think it's important that as consumers and as an industry that we support interim technologies. I mean, we're talking about recycling composites and multi blends and so on, but the technology needs to get there. So a year ago or 2 years ago, you wouldn't have thought that you'd be able to recycle your product in the way that you have. So that's an interim step. It's still not perfect because maybe you would like to at some point to create some blends. But if we don't support that T-shirt that has been recycled and perhaps costs a bit more, and that supply chain that isn't fully established and isn't as commercial as what else is available, then that next step doesn't get taken. Think of battery technology. So 15 years ago, the first electric cars were relatively commercially available, yet the range of them was 100 kilometers, 150 kilometers, and you're, you know, taking your battery pack out of your back pocket and plugging it into your car to get to get home. It was functional only to the degree of going to the supermarket and back. 15 years later, we have electric cars that will go 1,000 kilometers, and all of a sudden it's a completely different equation. It's plugged in once a week rather than every 6 hours. Without support of that early technology, where we sit today wouldn't exist. We wouldn't have been able to leapfrog from where we were 15 years ago to where we are today. And I think that's an important thing that the industry here has to really think about. It is that it's imperfect. It'll be somewhat less imperfect tomorrow or next year if we support imperfection.
Right. No, but obviously, the textile to textile recycling, or I mean just the recycling of textiles today, is estimated to be 1% of all textiles thrown away. So it's barely nothing. We're very, very far from having any type of circularity in this industry. Do you want to because I have a question for Anna après.
Just building on this, I think you mentioned before that this concern about constraining monomaterial is hindering innovation.
Yeah.
And I'm totally
boring.
Of the opposite opinion.
Okay.
At the beginning, we had this discussion around, yes, you have tape material based off polyurethane, which you need to make the seams waterproof and so on and so forth. And we were discussing about can we change it in polyester, and we did some research and we still do some research. But the key question which popped up is, why do we punch holes in a waterproof textile in the first place? And we wouldn't have come to that question without that constraint saying how we can get rid of PU tape. Now, what was the outcome? We presented at last ISPO together with Mammut seams which were welded, which for polyester is fantastic. We have at the moment the first series production machine for seamless shoes in production. So innovation is accelerated when we constrain the option. That's our experience in this process, which doesn't say we can invent everything.
No,
we have seen tremendous progress, and that's a bit what you were saying on the electrical cars. If we don't say, let's try it, we stay stuck with where we are today, and then we solve nothing.
I'm also wondering how this concept of rethinking product development and product design with a view towards circularity and designing for recycling, etc. Anna, do you think that this will have an impact, since you're a little bit outside of the industry, on the supply chain itself, on the way in which companies will interact? Would this imply different kinds of responsibilities between companies with regards to the end of life of the product?
Yes, I mean, I think I already mentioned, I kind of really think that people need to talk to each other. For example, the fabric mills with the recycling tech innovators, because they have to work together. But what I'm seeing actually also in my role, I'm kind of like becoming this person that's nagging people to take responsibility. And people get quite annoyed by me also at this fair, because I keep saying things like, well, to the fabric mill, say, well, what I want you to do, if you're selling me a fabric today, I want you to take that fabric back in 10 years' time when my brand has collected the end-of-life garments. So you need to take responsibility for the fabric you're selling me. And the same as the garment manufacturers. I mean, my kind of dream is that we give back the garments to the garment manufacturer for disassembly. So the responsibility is on them to assemble for disassembly at end of life. And I think this is the only way it can work, because how can we work out how to disassemble something if we don't know how it's been put together? So my call is really kind of, it's like, take your stuff back. I think that's a really good concept that I'm kind of trying to work on, and yes, harassing lots of people about doing this.
Well, the European Union is working on that. There's the REP or PER, product emitter responsibility, that the person making the product has to take responsibility for its end of life. And this is in test. We're not there yet, but
I think in this industry, people could, because we have garment manufacturers, fabric manufacturers coming together, because some of the technologies actually, work together, like seamless. So it's a real opportunity to make those connections.
That's why I want another question for César is, when your system is, it changes something of the supply chain in that you are like a one-stop shop. And
I
you're
hope
working
it changes completely, because in our technology, respect cut and sewing fabric, when from a cut and sewing fabric you want to realize a garment, you create a waste that can go from 15 to 30%. When you work on a seamless technology, that could be mine of Cifra, that we are the only to do this, or Santoni also, or Shima, you have the advantage that all the yarn go in the garments. You work, for instance, with a natural fiber or, let's say, Econil connected to the plastic in the sea, the more you buy, the more you clean the sea, because everything go directly in the garment. So my opinion, 3D technology, seamless technology, in the future will be something that a little bit game-changing.
Yes. And also in the fact that you're working with designers often. So
Design is what saved my company because we personalize each item. We make a kind of bulk personalization product. That's why I can produce it in Italy. And we have 100 people, and we can say 15 of these are in the design department creating. It is about 100 hours of design every day to personalize each item for the different brand. After, to stay in the market for brand like Nike and Adidas, I make connection to some place around the world where they place the label, a small hand job that I cannot do in Italy due to the cost. But the knitting machine do the most, 10,000 garments every day with about 60 people in production on three shifts. I don't need to go to make this knitting nowhere else.
Do you ever have any requests for a product that would be easy to recycle or easy have a second life, something?
I have in production all of the kind of the fiber, recycle, pre-consumer, post-consumer that you can find on the market, bio-based, like that. I will present. I go to the brand. At the end, I do what the brand asks to me, because I work for the brand, and what I can feel in the... Everybody talk about sustainability. After that, you know, each bio-based or biodegradable fiber, now there is a polyamide. The real thing is that it costs usually 3 times or 30% more, depending on which one, respect to the traditional polyester and polyamide. So everybody talk, but at the end, at the market, the main, the price still make the part, the strong part. This is the reality.
Okay. Coming back to you, Rüdiger, if I choose a Sympatex laminate, and I have a polyester face fabric, polyester back, recycled or recyclable, et cetera, when, you know, I mean, there will be other components that might not be polyester. There's also the matter of the seams. There's some sort of adhesive. Is there any change there that you see happening? And then the subsidiary question, which is also, you know, if we are going to trace a product from its initial stage to its second life, we hope, do we need to find out how often the item was worn, where it's going to land, do we need to identify it, what kind of traceability, tracking. But first, any product out there on the market, even if it's massively polyester, will have something else in it. What do we do? Is that good, bad, tolerable?
First of all, it's tolerable. Mm-hmm. The first tests we did on mechanical recycling, we can cope with about 0.5%.
5%?
0.5%, 0.5%. Different, yeah, that might be PU glue in the lamination process. We're still working on getting to 100%. We are in the 99.5% range. When you look at zippers, buttons, everything, we worked in contract and workwear on designs where we could actually solve 99% of the problem. The only problem was the reflective parts because there's glass in it. So we need to work on how can take this one off by an adhesive or whatever. But everything else you can do in polyester. And if ever you reach not 0.5 but 0.7, you can throw a few PET bottles in there and you have a 99.5% dish. So mechanically, tick in a box.
Okay.
Chemical recycling works anyway because you can separate things, but the effort is bigger.
Yeah.
We favor so much the monomaterial because it's one extra step less. I don't completely agree. We need to force the industry to take accountability for their closing, not necessarily taking it back, because we don't send the New York Times for recycling back to New York Times and the Corriere della Sera to Italy, but we throw it in a bin for paper recycling. But when you throw it in a recycling bin, and 70% of the garments in Germany are collected, behind the box, there needs to be an easy way to pull these things out and recycle. And if it's too complex in the mixture, then you create additional cost.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a cost issue. We hear it all the time. We know it. But if we don't just start in doing things, this movement won't shift. Solar energy has been expensive. And many things have been expensive at the beginning. When you look at the cost structure, recycling is always cheaper than non-recycling. So that was the first question. The second part was?
If we decide that we do create this ideal product, and it has, you know, maybe one or two different owners, and is washed and worn and torn and repaired. Do we need to trace it so that we're sure that it does get to some sort of circular loop one day?
God, no. I hope never. I follow this whole traceability discussion. We have a clear position. I think we need to get back and build trust in our industry. Traceability is nuts. If we go on blockchain, the sheer amount of storage time, calculation time, computer time, efforts, administration to build a t-shirt just to track back where the cotton is coming from.
It's not worth it?
It's just crazy. And especially then over time, and how do we store it in the t-shirt? Will we put electronics now in the t-shirt and make it even more complicated to recycle? No, that's crazy. We need to rebuild an industry of trust. And that industry of trust means we need to maximize transparency, open up our supply chains, and the social media will help us to make sure nobody messes around there. But even what is the maximum amount of cryptocurrencies we can create? 21 million. So how with 21 million variances we can cover traceability in industry with 100 billion different products every year? It's totally impossible. It's crazy. We are crazy if we would do traceability. No, we need simple solution that we can analyze the product when it comes back. Then, of course, it's washed, it's clean. The polyester coming out, perhaps some cellulose coming out, we can recycle, and that's it. Very simple.
Anna, another question for you. Are you working on any specific projects that you can tell us about with regards to designing for recycling, or is it all covered by an NDA and
Oh, yes.
That and the other thing? Mm.
It's all top secret, but it's just you lot here, so it's okay. I am. Very different ones. I'm not going to go into too much detail or specifics, but yes, I mean, I think I've actually been involved in a lot of sort of research and workshops on design for circularity and design for recycling. And I now actually, after 10 years of education and workshops and research, actually finally I'm getting the kind of products, the innovation project. So we're finally starting to actually try to design for recycling. And what I'm finding is that yes, all the theory is great, but in practice, it's very, very difficult. And that's also why I mentioned earlier, people are beginning to hate me because I keep nagging them. Mm. And, you know, as a designer, you're turning into this person that has to spend their entire time, you know, trying to ring fabric suppliers and garment manufacturers to pull it all together, which is actually, you know, a far bigger job than design ever was in the first place. When I used to design, you know, I've been in the sports industry for various decades. Used to design, you just design nice hooded sweatshirts, whatever. But now as a designer, you're taking all this responsibility because once you know about end of life, you know, you have that responsibility. And to be honest, that makes your life very, very hard. But it's also interesting now to actually try to find solutions and to find the collaborators, both with the fabric suppliers and the garment manufacturers and the technology innovators that are willing to join these kind of, whether it's for a startup or whether it's for, you know, a bigger brand. We're beginning to see some of these projects actually happening and learning from them. You know, we're building on them.
But you're saying it's a much tougher job.
Yes, I mean, I was actually thinking, you know, I always, when I come to these trade shows, you sort of reminisce about, I remember when I used to go to ISPO 25 years ago and everyone was so excited. And what was life like before we knew about sustainability? It was fun. It was like shopping and colours and colouring in by hand and getting high on Pantone pens. And, you know, this is like a generation design. But we had so much fun creating products, and now it's not a burden, it's still fun, but it's really hard, and sustainability has changed everything about design. Yeah. Once you know, you can't go back.
Yeah. Actually, I have one more question for you, José. It was about the ideal blends. So say merino wool isn't ideal for everything. What blends would you recommend, and would you go more towards the, if we want to stay in this sustainable materials, towards a recycled polyester or a biodegradable polyester? if given a choice?
Well, in that particular case, those two things aren't mutually exclusive.
Okay.
So a biodegradable additive can be included in a recycled base.
Okay.
So, but I'll go back to my first question is that, form follows function, really. Okay. So we need to be responsible about how we blend and not just doing things because they're, cheaper or something. But if there's a functional reason to do it and we can improve the product, then that's at the point that we would probably do so.
Okay, good. Let's open the discussion to our audience. Do we have someone to get a microphone around? And does anyone want to ask a question or contribute to the debate?
Hey, more for Anne, I guess, with the design side. It's such a big scope, and I think you've sort of touched on that, but when you're actually designing and you're looking at that sort of end of life, when you're working for a big brand or a small brand, what are you finding in terms of the differences? You know, you can work on a really tiny innovation project, which is very agile, but how do you change it if you're then going into a big brand? Are you finding challenges there or maybe opportunities between the two sort of ends of the spectrum?
Yeah, that's a really good question because I've actually, let's say the last year, I've spent far more time working with startups, which before I was like, no way. I've always worked for the big brands and I want to work with the big brands. But the thing is, there are so many layers. And even when I've worked on innovation projects for big brands or just training, things like that, it's taken years to filter down to the product or to the people, to make any difference. So actually, I've kind of discovered working with smaller brands or on very specific projects because you can see results much quicker. And I think the small brands really kind of inspire the bigger brands as well. We see that all the time. And, you hear stories about the big brands Googling all the startups on Kickstarter and stealing their ideas. That's not the spirit. But these kind of things happen. And, the industry is getting very inspired by all the kind of disruptive little things that are going on. And that's the potential of it, I think.
Hi, Ralph Stefan. I'm a freelance journalist. If we talk about functionality and performance the last years, we've always talked about hybrid systems. Coming back to this mono brand, mono fabric stuff, is this the future, the good old three-layer system again?
Rüdiger, do you want to contribute?
If it serves a purpose, definitely yes. And I think we need to again, learn new questions. I don't fully agree that designing, even though I have never done it and I don't know the good old times from we can do everything we want. But I think once we love sustainability and don't consider it anymore as a constraint, we can come up and it might be one of the old solutions. I mean, now we drive with the SUV to the mailbox and at some point in time we walked. We can walk again. There will be solutions which are so easy. But now we have reasons to go back to them and we can see them as a new step because we look at them in a different perspective.
Actually, can I add something to that? It's this kind of term I've been thinking about. We kind of need to un-innovate sometimes because we've been over-innovating, and that really speaks to what you're just saying. Going back, going to the simple solutions, walking to buy our food, cycling, all that kind of stuff, it's really coming back. And we have to look at innovation and sometimes look, why have we innovated all these crazy things? Do we really need them? And, sort of go the other way again.
Do you want to contribute to that?
Yeah, it's a good point in that the industry... We've created a market of purists. Everybody thinks they're going to climb Everest, or at least that they have to be outfitted as if they're going to climb Everest. When the closest most of us will ever get is a photograph. And so, how good does it really need to be if I need waterproof technology that's going to keep me dry for 24 hours in a downpour? Well, for me personally, if I'm 24 hours in a downpour, I'm probably dead because I usually can find shelter or will get myself out, or I'll get from my car or the train or the bus to wherever I'm going. So do I need that level of technology for most of my use, even for my performance apparel? I'm a cyclist. I will never ride the Tour de France. But, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, I look or need that level of apparel, of cycling equipment, when in fact I really don't. So if we dial back from a just a personal standpoint, and this really, you know, I think it's an achievement thing, a personality thing that we've created, but it's also fostered by the brands we always want to do a little bit better. We always want to perform a little bit better. There always has to be this incremental improvement, when in fact a simple three-layer system with three different materials is probably good enough for most of us most of the time.
Hmm. Thank you.
It's been brewing. I have a couple of questions, but I think, Rüdiger, I totally agree that we need, or also José said that we need less, actually. I mean, everything is pushed by the brands, by marketing, by stories, that we need all these things. But at the moment, a lot of companies, or let's say brands, use, I wouldn't say everybody's greenwashing, but a lot of take the sustainability past journey, yes, we're in it, that's another story, that's us. But still, I feel there's not enough each brand is doing to pull the story around, to say, actually, Patagonia did it. They said to their consumers, don't buy our stuff, which I think is a huge impact. And if each brand would do it, we would be able to change that. So I feel at the moment there's not enough responsibility, because everybody is pulling to the suppliers, everybody's, but in the end it's the brand who wants the price. So again, we have the price, who's pushing them, yeah, but we need $1 less, and then you guys come up with the blends to help on the level. So my point is, I think we all have responsibility, but who has the, let's say, the guts or the balls to go out there and say, as a brand, actually, we are taking responsibility on all levels. So you taking it, Rüdiger, and you, and as a designer, but I think it's not somebody specific, but I still don't see that anyone is taking really responsibility. We're just talking about it. So how can we change that to really see the impact that we really need to see a sustainable outcome? I mean, in the end, it's the carbon emission, the footprint we are leaving each factory, each supplier here, and not in a dramatic way. It's just the reality. And everybody's saying, well, it's a price. No, it's if the price, everybody would agree that we're going to spend so much, then the fast fashion world wouldn't have a chance to stand, because people would say, yeah, we spent the $5 or $10 more, and we have an impact, and we have a change. And we can then support the suppliers who then have the money to invest in wastewater management or better. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm just talking. But you get my point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's an important point. I have to say I'm a pragmatic optimist by nature. So I always look at a pragmatic way to get as fast as possible to the ideal world. We have created that industry pretty much on stories, not on facts. Whatever that is, water column or any fancy stuff apparently people need, it scares the hell out of me when I see that in people order garments to make an Instagram picture and send it back. And the return rates of all the garment suppliers are enormous from that. But I think we need to recognize we are that story industry. And the fastest way is if we change the story pattern.
Exactly.
So what makes me really optimistic on the greenwashing is that even the last person has understood we need to change something. Yeah. And where I'm also optimistic, Ed, that social media will help us to bash those ones who are just pretenders. And that will run fast. But the first step was the entire industry has embraced it, and I dare to say in the last 3 years it's fascinating how fast that change came. So let's now focus on the next step and motivate, put the pioneers out, try things out, have a super discussion around monomaterial or non-monomaterial, around blockchain or non-blockchain, traceability versus transparency. It's great. Let's open that forum, and then more and more people will go in there. And then we embrace everything, put everything together and say, eh, actually, it's four or five different things. It's water, it's chemistry, it's energy, and it's recycling. So who can provide a solution to all four of them? And then gradually it comes. So I would say give us another 3 years, and the greenwashers will have disappeared, or we make them disappear. But you're right, it's a danger. But at least there's a recognition that the topic is now on the agenda, and I think that's a positive part of this.
Yeah, I totally agree. But then again, when you look at Bangladesh, I mean, I don't know if people... Yeah, but I know, guys, but that's very political, but it's a fact that, I mean, the whole cotton thing, and it was a big thing, actually, a documentary on BBC lately, and they are pulling all over the same, but nothing has changed in the factories. And I don't want to name brands, and they are big brands who are all involved, but on the website is everything saying, not we're not involved, but they are, because there is unfortunately missing the trust. And I mean, yeah. But it's again, then the price. It's all about the price, and it's they put the wrong labels on, it's not organic, and they do it on the table. I mean, it's Uzbekistan is the best example, and I don't want to go into that direction because then you have to throw me out. But yeah, but no. I know, but I mean, everybody knows that it's happening, but nothing is changing, to be really honest.
Well, the change is it becomes transparent. And I've seen supply countries where you really, by governmental instruction, people take this up and make a change. So there are some Asian countries who change. I would agree we're still one of the messiest industry I have ever came across in my life. We offshored middle-age processes into third countries and pretended it's not our problem.
Yeah.
So we are the worst of most of them. But I think we need to keep that hope that change happen. We need to keep... And I think sustainability, if it becomes a new blue ocean for companies and the truthfulness into it, that will rapidly make the change because our industry is not so complicated.
No, definitely.
So the change can happen overnight. The technologies are there. I think what we need is going through that transition times with the fakers, with the pretenders, with some people. But there are people now who seriously make moves. I see companies who haven't discussed these things. And honestly, CO2 in our industry 2 years ago, nobody knew about it.
True.
And in 2 years, it became obvious February last year, end of the year, we had the UN Charter. And now it's on the top of the agenda. So that's pretty fast. And I think this, another 3 to 5 years, it's a different industry. So that's why I love this storytelling part. We need stories at the market.
Oh, yeah,
when the retailer can differentiate between the shitty stuff and the good stuff, he doesn't differentiate anymore between the water column X and Y and Z and tries to make the shiny stuff.
I think you've touched on an interesting point because there's relatively few brands out there for whom these... issues are part of their DNA.
Yeah.
And so I think there's some brands who want to do better, but price becomes the barrier. And there's some brands who probably don't care and use it as a tool. But as a brand or people who are exposed to the market, there has to be an openness, and you mentioned Patagonia, who happen to be customers of ours, and we've learned a lot from them. But I think the most important lesson is that, you know, they do things earnestly and they take a position, and then they acknowledge that it's imperfect.
Yeah.
And you know, if they're challenged on it, they listen. And they said, "Oh, that's pretty good, and we'll think about how we improve on that." And they say, "Look, we're better than we were yesterday. We're hopefully not as good as we'll be tomorrow, but in today's world, this is the best that we can do. And you know, tomorrow, hopefully, we'll have a better message to give to you." And that's different from somebody saying, "Look, we have it solved. Look at our website, and we have it solved." I think brands are unwilling to take criticism, and therefore they perhaps adopt or put forth a position that is really beyond what they can substantiate or can really execute, regardless of intention, whether it's malicious or not.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Thank you.
It comes back to honesty. I think we have to wrap up because we've pretty much... Is there any one last question from the audience?
It's less a question. I would like to thank you for this audience and for this place to sensible more people for sustainability. But I think the most important thing at all to solve all these problems and to change it is we have to keep our eye and our power on education, that everybody knows, in fact, what he is responsible for, and that he can learn to handle better from producer till the guys who use it. Let's get more power on education. That's what I would like to say to everybody in here. Thank you.
Well, yeah, this was the point of this panel talk, was to raise a question and see where it brings us. It's still very much open to debate, but I'm glad we started this discussion here. Thank you so much for everything. Thank you, the audience, and have a good show.
Thank you for listening to Sustain and Innovate Conference by Performance Days and Sports Fashion by SAZ. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other expert talks, go to performancedays.com. Copyright November 2019 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.